know what God wants from you. You don't. You're just hoping you know. The conversation with God has to allow quiet time, private time, in which you can hear the voice of God in your mind, in which you can hear the stirrings of God in your soul. If your life is one series of activities from another, you're not going to have that time to make true discernment. What is our family called to? What am I being called to? So a parent's first job is not only to just make rules for their family, but to stick to those rules and to follow them themselves. Now, I mentioned the monastic ideal. When you're trying to set a standard for your family, one of the things that I learned, my husband and I love monasteries. For some reason, we both grew up in a very uncatechized Catholic environment. Sad to say, we both went to Catholic schools, but neither of us were well catechized at all. It was when we started having children, we learned about EWTN, we got the New Catechism of the Catholic Faith, we got involved with our Sorrowful Mother's Ministry, started to read Scott Hahn, started to read Patrick McDraid, we started getting involved in our learning process, and we were just amazed at what the Catholic Church had to teach us and to tell us. One of the things that we're very attracted to was a monastic ideal. I'm not sure exactly why, but it's been a very fruitful thing for us. We visited different monasteries around the U.S. whenever we've taken a trip. And the thing that I want to share with you is that a monastic ideal involves a balanced life. We are not just a soul. We are a soul and a body and an intellect. The monastic ideal fulfills all of our fullness as human beings. So there is time for prayer in specific times during the day. They must be met. Those times for prayer are key to fulfilling yourself as a human being. There also must be time during the day for physical labor. Work is part of who we are as human beings. We're physical beings. Labor is a good thing. I have my boys cleaning out the garage today. That's physical labor. And they go, what about schoolwork, Mom? I said, well, that's intellectual labor. You'll do that Monday. Today is physical labor. You have a job to do. We need this job done. They know it, and they'll do it. Physical labor is healthy. It's just like working in the garden. It is something that brings you back in touch with your fullness of your human being and your nature. Also, we are an intellect. God made us on purpose with an intellect. We need to be involved in our education, in our enrichment. And intellect doesn't just mean taking logic classes. It means knowing who you are in your culture, in your society, and in your Catholic faith. It means stimulating yourself to be challenged, to learn, to study, to find the glory of God in the created world. And that means being willing to read and to study, to learn, to memorize. Now, in all of these aspects, your prayer for your spirit, work for the body, and study for the mind, you need to keep a kind of balance when you're setting those ideals in your family. It helps a lot because, frankly, you study better if you have a break and you do something different. You work better if you have a break and you do something different. God knows what he's doing when he created us with this tri-nature, the body, the mind, and the spirit. We do better when we fulfill all of them rather than just focusing on one and suffocating the others. Now, follow-up, as I said before, is very important. If you come up with an ideal and some project ideals or some rules, you need to follow up on those things. This is an organic life you're living. You don't set them in stone and say, well, this is the way it is for the rest of our lives. Your kids, your families, you will change. Other things will intervene. You need to follow up and say, okay, is this working for us? Has something come in and intervened in our lives that we need to reconsider our priorities? My husband came down with cancer 3 years ago. When he came down with cancer, we quickly had to make dramatic changes in our priorities because he was no longer able to be in the garden. He was no longer able to do the physical labor. So that didn't mean our ideals were lost. It meant we had to take the reality that God had given us and change things according to the new reality that had been handed to us. So following up and being willing to change things, being flexible, does not mean that you abandon your ideals. Don't say, well, I guess that didn't work. There are things that won't work, and you need to change them. But that changing, that flexibility, is part of the human process. Now, one of the biggest things that I've found for parents on a logical basis is that our society tends to have a false idea of rewards and punishments for kids. when I had my last baby and I was in the hospital, one of the nurses came to me, and I was going to have the rest of the kid. My husband was bringing the rest of the kids in. And the nurse was telling another nurse, and she goes, "Oh, you can't wait till you meet this family. Their kids are really well behaved, and they're really great kids, and blah, blah, blah." And the other nurse said to her, "Well, I wonder how she does it, 8 kids, you know?" And she goes, "Oh, she threatens and bribes them." And I'm like, no, that's not it. It's rewards and punishments. Now, we have a wrong idea about rewards and punishments in this society. In this society, I've found this over and over and over again with parents. As a teacher, I've found this in the classroom. I've found that what parents think they have to do with their kids is bribe them. You give them stuff to reward them for good behavior, and you threaten them when they misbehave. Those are very ineffective ways of changing behavior. What I do in my family that I've found very effective is that rewards are based on merit. When they do something right, when they show responsibility, when they follow up, when they obey me with a right away obedience, what I give them is more opportunity to show they can be responsible people. Kids want to be in control of their own lives. They want to own their own lives. They want opportunities to be and to grow. When you allow a child to have more growth opportunity, when you give them more choices, they immediately feel rewarded. They know you're trusting them. For example, little ones, I might give them very basic reward opportunities, like they get to choose what to have for dinner. Out of certain options, you know, they're not going to order Casey's Pizza on me. They have certain options that they can pick. They get to choose more what they want to wear. They get to choose more what kinds of things they're going to study in school, what directions. There's a core that I cover, but then I allow them more opportunities for choice in their lives. I allow, if my kids have done all their work and they want to do something else, I will pay them for an extra job. They get to spend that money to buy something that they really want. I allow them more opportunities for more choices, for more involvement in their own lives. Now, of course, with little ones, and, you know, don't throw the social worker at me, but very little ones do need something concrete. And I know this goes against the UN resolution, Rights of the Child Act, but I will swat my child or swat their hands if they're about to run into the street. Because, frankly, I think a swat is a lot less than getting hit by a car. I think a SWAT is far more effective now than waiting until they're ready to go and meet the police and try to wind their way out of it. The SWAT, when they're very little, gives them a concrete reality: don't disobey me or you're going to feel it on the behind. And you don't have to beat your child. All I have to do is SWAT them once or twice, when very effectively, and then the next time I say, "Do you want a spanking?" They'll say no, because they learn that they will follow up with a spanking if they misbehave. It does not take much to train a child that when you say something, you mean it. The key is to mean it. If you say it, but you don't follow up, you've just lost your opportunity. What you've taught them is that you don't keep your word, and that you can threaten empty threats, and that they can just keep whining and misbehaving, and you're going to have a bigger and bigger problem on your hand. I have seen so many examples of what I say is heartbreak in the future, because children do not obey their parents at 5, they will not obey them at 10, they will not obey them at 16, and you're going to have a tragedy on your hands. Believe me, if you do not take control and offer that model of power and true strength to your child, somebody else will. And that somebody else who will may be very demonic and may have very demonic influences. And I don't say this because I want to share secrets, but we have a situation in our family in which a young girl decided that she didn't want to be a girl anymore at a young age. So her parents went along with it. She decided she wanted to be gay. Her parents, her school teachers, everyone went along with it. She's only 16 years old. She has now decided she wants to be a boy. Everyone, including the pediatrician, have gone along with it. She is taking the shots and the surgeries necessary to become a boy. The tragedy is that she is 16 and she is doing irreparable damage to the body and the glory that God intended for her as a girl. She doesn't see it, her parents don't see it, the pediatricians don't see it, the school doesn't see it. They are all going along with this tragedy because they think that she knows what's going to make her happy. She has never been happy with any of the decisions she has made thus far. If you don't stop your children when they start an evil, expect the evil to continue and to go places where you may never be able to retrieve them. Think of it this way. If you don't stop a whining, misbehaving child, why do you think it's going to be easier for the police to do it? Eventually, there comes a point of no return. There is a place called hell for souls that hate God. Don't sacrifice your child to the altar of the devil, who will take them places you can't get them back from. If it needs a spanking when they're three, give them the spanking. If it needs a slap on the hands, give them the slap on the hands. If it means saying no, say no now. And I'm going to talk about purging your homes in a few minutes. So using rewards means being able to take their what is good in them, rewarding them with more of it, opportunities to do greater good. One thing my kids love is when they're good at something, they get to do more. When we do the gardening, one of my daughters realized she was really interested in herbs. So I let her go. She got her own plot of land. She got the seeds she needed. She took off with it. She felt so enriched by learning how to make, you know, certain plants that could help with headaches, it could help with poultices for burns. She felt very enriched by that. It made her feel strong. It made her feel good about herself. My sons have certain strength. Allow them to use your sons and your daughter's strength and more opportunity to grow in those areas. That will reward them far better than toys and material goods. Though I do allow them to earn money to buy books that they like, occasional toys. Of course, kids are kids. A toy can be very entertaining, but you have to keep it in respect. Toys will only bring them a temporary pleasure, whereas opportunities to grow in areas that make them strong will give them a lasting joy. Punishments, like I said, is for little ones a slap on the hand, a swat. As they get older, you can't do that. What you need to do is the reverse. You take away opportunities. You show them that they're not responsible. And all of this, rewards and punishments, you have to have conversations with your kids. You cannot allow your kid to get out of control and blame it on them. It's you're the parent, you're the one responsible. You need to take away their opportunities to get out of control. So I've more than once seen the situation where his child is getting out of control. And I mean, I'm talking about older kid, whining, demanding, interrupting, eye rolling, rude behavior, sometimes even violent behavior. And the parent sits by and says, "Honey, don't do that. Honey, don't do that. Honey, I said don't do that." And they don't get up and deal with it. Even if you're in a public place, get up and deal with the problem. Don't sit by and hope that it's going to get better or be weak. You are the model of strength. Your authority has been granted to you by God. He gave you that child. God expects certain things from you. He expects you to expect certain things from your kids. There is a perfect delineation of power and respect here. You are given your authority by God to make them obey you because you're obeying God. God must come first. That also ties into the reality of what's going on in your family. If there is sinful behavior going on in your family, be it your spouse, be it your family member anywhere, a certain detachment is necessary to face evil. That means you have to be able to say to somebody, I do not believe this is right behavior. You know, you need to be able to confront it. The detachment means that you're more willing to please God than please yourself or stay comfortable. Doesn't mean that on an adult-to-adult basis you will change a person, but it does mean you have to stand up for something that's wrong. You have to be able to say, "I don't think adultery is right. I don't think that skipping Mass is okay. I don't think sleeping in on Sunday is a good choice for this family." You need to be able to say, and it's not just your authority, you need to refer back to the authority of God. God has given us this responsibility. We need to fulfill this responsibility. You need to refer back to your catechism, to the Ten Commandments, to the teachings of God. Your authority comes from God. You need to use that authority in your life. And it is hard. Believe me, I know it is hard. It can cause all sorts of family problems. But it doesn't mean you have to beat somebody over the head with a club. It just means you need to speak the truth and then be willing, if the person rejects it, just love them anyway. You love them anyway. But you stay and hold firm to what you know is the teachings of the church. You need to know the teachings of the church in order to witness them. And that means in your family. Again, parents must be willing to reward properly, to punish properly, and to not sit by when your kids are out of control. You need to deal immediately with problems as they come up. That means a priority. If you're about to go out the door to a party or to soccer practice or to piano and you have a meltdown, you deal with the meltdown. If you have a situation in which somebody is being blatantly dishonest with you, you need to deal with that sin before you deal with lesser issues. Sometimes in our society, being polite and keeping on schedule is so important that we let things slide that we shouldn't. Being honest and dealing with sin is a priority, because if you don't deal with sin, it will continuously come after you. The devil, as my son once reminded me, he doesn't get tired. We do. But if we give it up to him, he'll keep coming, and he'll keep coming after our kids. When something is wrong in your family or in your personal life, let other issues go. If it's piano lessons, you need to call up the teacher and say, "We're not coming today. I have to deal with something." If it's soccer practice, if it's school, the grades in school are not as important. Education is important, but it's not God. It will not offer us eternal salvation. We have to deal with sin honestly, immediately, and put it as a priority. Now, in order for children to have the kind of relationship with us necessary, they must respect us. That means you cannot put up with eye rolling, impatient sign, looking away, tapping the foot, having the child make it clear that you're boring the heck out of them. You are the authority in this person's life. You may be the only authority in this person's life, because we've been taught for the last several 50 years or so that parents really aren't that great, that adults really aren't that smart, that we really don't know anything. And in fact, kids are much better at computers. They're much smarter than we are, and they know a whole lot more than we do. It's not the truth. God, it shouldn't be the truth. If it is the truth, you need to find out why. What's wrong with this picture? Why aren't you the authority? And the way that you need to look at this is, who's the adult in your life? Very often, and I've had this in my own family, where people hearken back. My mom did this, and so I've never been able to, you know, handle this. Or they blame their grandparents. They blame their parents. You're talking about 20, 30, 40. I've even had 50-year-old people tell me the reason they can't handle their life, the reason they can't handle their job, the reason they can't handle their kids is because something their mother did way back when. Grow up. You need to accept responsibility for your adulthood. You're an adult now. My mother, wonderful woman that she was, very intelligent, very lively, very loving, was also a periodic alcoholic. I dealt with that all my life. When I got older, I thought, I'm going to work for the sisters, the Dominican sisters. There were problems going on there, so I went into Peace Corps, dealt with Peace Corps. There were, you know, not all the Peace Corps people are great. There's some interesting situations going on in Peace Corps. Then, you know, I went in, I kept trying to help. I kept trying to make the world a better place. Very frustrating, because what you meet overall is a lot of people want to blame everyone else and really don't want to help themselves. And I myself had to face the fact that I was still hearkening back to the griefs of my childhood. And I decided to go to somebody, a therapist who could help me. And who did God give me as a therapist but a Jewish woman who had been married 5 times? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, God, are you serious? She actually had a great wisdom. And her great wisdom, I'm sure, was God-given. And the great wisdom was she let me sit on her chair in her little office and tell all my woes. She let me do this for about 2-3 months. You know, I'd come once a week, I'd tell her my woes, she'd listen, she'd say, okay, go home, cry about it for a while, come back, tell me some more. We did this, and then one day I came in and she goes, you know what, you've cried it all out, you've told me your story, you're done now, get on with your life. It was the best thing anybody ever did. She said, grow up and become your own adult. Stop blaming everybody else. Admit the fact that they're broken. Admit the fact that they were crippled people. Admit the fact that your parents had problems. Accept them for who they are. Realize crippled people don't dance. Accept them and become the adult in your own life and do better than they did. It was the best advice I was ever given. And I decided to go back to my Catholic roots. I decided to go and learn my faith, and it has been the best growing up experience I've ever had. I took control of my life, not control in that I control everything, but I took ownership of my life. And I insist my kids do the same. Their education is theirs. Their soul is theirs. Their relationship with God is theirs. And as I get older, I tell them, I am not the gate to heaven. You're not going through me. You're going through him. He's the one you need to obey. He's the one you need to make relationship with. He's the one who can open the doors for you. If you want to become the person that you're called to be, you need to have a relationship with him. And that has changed everything. My family, from my 16-year-old down to my 4-year-old, are very different people than the family that I grew up with. They are communicators. They are lovers. They are builders. They are people, despite the fact that my husband is in agonizing pain too much of the time, they have a positive outlook on life because they see that they have a mission to accomplish. Okay, so if you allow your children to be disrespectful, it's your fault. You need to take that and say, this is unacceptable behavior. You need to insist that your children respect you. Your grandchildren should respect you. They should not be allowed to eye roll. They should not be allowed to tap their foot. They should not look like they're bored. You say, listen, I'm here in front of you, and I'm giving you some advice, or I'm talking to you, or this is a job I want you to do. Stand still, shut up, and listen for a minute. You're the kid, I'm the adult. Make those parameters, please. If you don't, no one will. Or who will become their best friend? Twilight. Twilight will become their best friend. A vampire will become their best friend. Don't let that happen to your family. Okay, parents need to speak clearly, and please don't ramble on like I'm doing. You need to go on. When you got a point to make, make it, and demand that they follow through. Do it and get the job done. Do not use your children as sounding boards. Even though you may be in great emotional distress, find an adult, a responsible, hopefully a spiritually mature adult to talk to. Don't use your kids. I found this over and over and over and over again in my teaching profession and in my family life. We tend to use our kids to explain, you know, we want them to understand why we're not feeling good or why this is happening. You need to model the strong adult in your life and in their life. Don't use them as your sounding board or as a crutch. Let them be kids. Be strong for them. Find a responsible adult to talk to about the personal issues in your life. If you've made a mistake, fix it. Stop doing the wrong behavior. Don't sit back and try to analyze it and try to, what have I done? Don't spend any time doing that. Just move on. Become the adult. Work on being the adult in your life. And you treat your children appropriately. They're children. You're modeling adult behavior. You're the strong one. And yes, you're going to break down. Yes, you're going to have days when you're just like racking your head against the wall going, what am I going to do? Find a spiritual director. Find a responsible adult. And be catechized. Sometimes for me, the best person I've gone to is St. Teresa of Avila. I love her books. She has a lot of wisdom. She rambles on sometimes. But I love her books. She does get to the heart of matters. Find those people and those witnesses in your life that can do that for you. Don't use your kids that way. Also, it's a practical reality that what we have written down helps us. When you have rules, write them down, post them, put them up, discuss them. I have my kids, sometimes the older ones especially, involved in the rule writing process because it's so ironic. I make rules. I say, you need to do this and this and this. Now, for example, an eating thing, I always have, you eat what's set before you, and if you don't want it, you just don't eat. I thought, okay, this is going to be good. I'm just going to make all my kids behave this. My oldest son hates tomatoes in any way, shape, or form. But I like to, you know, we grew a lot of tomatoes, spaghetti sauce and pizza and all of the things that go with tomatoes. That kid would go for meal after meal after meal, not eating. He broke me down. What I eventually came to was, okay, bread and milk. If you don't eat what's said before, you got the choice of option bread and milk. It worked for us. Now, ironically, at 16, he's the harshest critic of the younger kids when they don't eat what's said before them. We need to set rules at work, and you can involve your older kids in that process because sometimes they can give you insight. They can help you understand what's going on and come up with realistic ideas. Okay, so you can't allow manipulation and whining to rule your life. You have to be the adult in your life, and you have to be the teacher and the model of the virtues and the ideals that you're setting for your family. If they misbehave, you need to come up with a solution. And like I said, having them written down. For little ones, star charts can be very effective. For older ones, rules can be very effective. You need to have a way of accounting for it. Did I say John is in agonizing pain? No, I didn't mean that. He sometimes is in agonizing pain. Actually, it can work both ways some days. But again, that's part of the mortification process, isn't it? Okay. One of the processes, like I was alluding to before, is that in order to do these things for your kids, you need to be catechized and your kids need to be catechized. Don't leave it to a teacher once a week hoping that they're going to do the job. A lot of times what I've found catechists have to do is entertain because they can't keep kids' attention, so they do a lot of crafts. You cannot teach the fullness of the Catholic faith in a 15 or 20 minute time once a week, a few weeks of the year. It is the parents' primary duty to teach your kids the fullness of the Catholic faith. You'll never do it all. But you need to be responsible for teaching them the Ten Commandments. Teach them their Catholic prayers. Teach them the laws concerning marriage, please. Teach them that an annulment is not a Catholic divorce. Teach them that a marriage is a covenant, that it reflects a covenant relationship between God and man. Teach them the highest ideals. Teach them about the saints. Read saint stories together. Teach them about the scripture. You know, when my boys were receiving their confirmation a couple of years ago, I had taught them their catechism. They knew it well. But unfortunately, that was not true for everybody. At the last day, on the day of their catechism, on the day of their confirmation, when the bishop was there, he had the group together and he wanted to ask them a few basic questions, and nobody was answering the questions. My sons had already been answering the questions. I got embarrassed and they didn't want to answer anymore. So the bishop, just to make an easy one, threw out, "Okay, can somebody tell me who Moses is?" And there was dead silence. Finally, somebody raised their hand. Not my sons. And they said, "Was he the one who built the ark?" This is the day of their confirmation in front of the bishop. This is a sad commentary on our kids' knowledge of the Old Testament and the New Testament as well. You have an obligation and a duty to know what the Old Testament is about, and we have wonderful helpers, people like Scott Hahn and Patrick Madrid and Father Robert Barron, the Eternal Word Network, and many other. We have the most opportunity of any generation ever created, and yet we are the most uncatechized generation that has ever been. Be responsible for teaching your kids. If you don't know it, learn it. The Catechism of the Catholic Faith is a wonderful book. I've read it cover to cover more than once. It is a wonderful resource. Find it, read it, learn it, study it, make it your own, and pass it on. Also, teach your kids the law, the flaws of moral relativism, which is huge. It's a heresy of our day. It's one of the things that our politics is running on today. Moral relativism is a lie. There is truth. It exists. God knows it, and he has passed it on to us, and if we don't know it, we have failed to do something we ought to do. Go to confession for omitting to do a very important thing. We need to teach our children that moral relativism is a lie. If you don't know what it means, you need to find out what moral relativism is and why it's a heresy. Now, purification, go through your books, go through your DVDs, go through your books, the pictures in your house, and get rid of the ones that are temptation toward evil. There is a lot of stuff out there that's pretending to be good that's really quite evil. I mentioned Twilight. No, I don't like to pick on particular authors. I happen to have read that one because it's a big hit and it has a big movie. It is a moral chaos book. It is about a dead guy who becomes a savior. It is about it is twisted beyond words. Don't say this is okay reading, because if you do, you're going to have some reflected behavior, reflected thinking that's very chaotic. You have a right and the authority to take some material out of your house. If it is a moral chaos book, if it is a book that is teaching your kids that they can become God in their own lives, or that they have the authority over their parents, or that they can go into the occult, you need to think clearly about what you're letting in your house. You would say, "I would never allow the devil to come in and rule my house." But yet we have books, movies, and TVs, and DVDs, and computer things that do, in fact, do the same thing. You get them out of your house and take the authority to do those things. One of the things that I'm going to be in the back, I will have a time to sign books. As he mentioned, I do have a book that I've written. It's called Arum. It's the beginning of a trilogy. I have my books in a brand new publishing, Catholic publishing company called Tuscany Press. I prayed to Mary that there would be a Catholic publishing company that would publish fiction. We do not have a strong Catholic fiction publishing company. Tuscany Press was just created this year by some very devoted Catholic men who are doing a fantastic job. They had a contest. They got, in just a couple of months, they got over 333 submissions from over 5 countries, and they are now in the discernment process of picking the best, and they're going to publish them. I'm hoping mine will be one of them. Anyway, I'm in that process. I have some of Tuscany's cards back there. We need to support Catholic authors, Catholic artists, Catholic musicians. If we don't support them, they'll die. They're out there. Please give them some, and again, our Sorrowful Mothers Ministry. Support them. If you don't, who are we supporting? Where is your money going? Okay. Teach your kids to discern their vocation, not their vacational life. You have a vocation to fulfill, a mission that is specifically yours. Your kids have a vocation to fulfill, a mission that is specifically theirs. If they see their vacational life as being just a good time, they'll miss it. And they won't, they will not fulfill the truest source of happiness, which is to fulfill the will of God in their lives. Allow your kids to be uncomfortable. Allow them to work till they sweat. Something that people don't like to talk about, but kids need to learn to work. They need to work till it's uncomfortable and they're not happy anymore, and go beyond that. Teach them to endure. Teach them the pain is not a horrible thing. My husband has endured a great deal. He is a model of endurance. And sometimes he sets the bar a little higher than I like. But the fact of the matter is, by his example, my children have learned not to complain about minor woes and to go beyond and to do better. And it has been actually a very enriching and strengthening thing for them. Allow them to be part of the house. Allow them to own part of your home and your life. Allow them to be part of the decision-making process when they show responsible behavior. We need to allow our kids to become missionaries. We need to see their vocational life as really the transformation to bring souls to Christ. There is no greater call than to bring souls to Christ. We will live forever, so will our kids. The question is, where are we preparing them for? If we do not do our jobs, we have failed to do something that it was a call to us. If we do not give unrelenting vigilance, someone else who is unrelenting will come in. Someone who never tires of tempting us. He will take them and he will take us places we do not wish to go. We will not be happy people. May we ask for God, from Mary, from the angels and saints, the grace to endure this earthly journey, to never give up and never give in. Amen.
Thank you.